This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Message is unique because, I mean, there are a lot of hip-hop artists. So what is it about the way that you create your beats or the way that you create your lyrics? What is it that made you believe that you had something special to say?
Honestly, I've been doing music since I was about 10 or 11 years old. And I got started because the older brothers on my block, I just wanted to hang out with the older heads. And I used to go outside when they would freestyle and try to jump in and freestyle. And they kind of were just like, you know, you have a different life. You've had different experiences. Even when I was younger, they were like, that's what you should rhyme about. That's what you should express. You know, and ever since then, even when I had stopped doing music for a long time, and one of my brothers, Dad Sport, he was doing a song about the police because someone had got killed by the police in Jersey, and he was like, "Yo, you're the only person I know who could do something on this song, right?" And since then, I just kept on with it, you know. So I mean, I think that I was just raised this way, and if it wasn't through music, I would be getting this message out in a different kind of way.
Right. And that sort of leads me to another question I had for you. So what was it that made you, what made you politically aware? Was it the news? I mean, was it family? I mean, have you always had a taste for the political as well as the musical?
Ever since I was a kid, I was raised this way. I was raised by my mother. My mother, she marched with Dr. King. She was in the Peace Corps in Venezuela and Colombia. My grandmother, she was a teacher in the Philadelphia school system for like 30 years. My whole family's from Camden, New Jersey. And, you know, just being raised in Jersey between Camden, Teaneck, and Jersey City has just, it kept my eyes open to certain things. Like when I was a kid and I was in grade school in Teaneck, one of my classmates' cousin was murdered by the police. His name was Philip Pinnell. And we knew, you know, he was from a generation, like a little bit older than us. He was in high school and we were in grade school. But it's like, you know, someone in the neighborhood that you recognize and you know. And he was shot in the police. He was shot in the back. They said that he had a gun and wound up he had a starter pistol on him. And they were just, you know, starter pistols they used for track and field. They were just shooting it up in the air. And, you know, he was murdered. And as a young person, I was just like, well, everything kind of clicked in my head that, you know, being a person of color in the United States, we have different, we lead a different life. We have a different set of rules and we're treated differently here. And that was around the same age when I first started writing poetry. I started writing songs and short stories, and this is what evolved into me writing hip hop lyrics. So I think it was just kind of like this path was already there for me to walk down.
So I mean, was it a short step from deciding to combine your poetry and your music with your political activism? Because some people never make that connection.
For me, there really wasn't a choice. I mean, my mother always told me that if you're not doing something for your people in your community, then you ain't really doing nothing. You know, she was always actively involved and had me actively involved in any kind of initiatives that she was doing in our community. And my mother, she's a health person. So she always works in with whatever kind of teaching she's doing to work that into the community as well. Like she did a Healthy Heart program in Patterson. She did the Asthma Project in Manhattan. So it was always just like, you know, if you're not doing something for your people and your community and to better this world, then no matter what you do for yourself, it's not really going to be worth anything. You have to make sure that everybody can benefit from your knowledge, your information. And then it's the same kind of teachings I got when I started studying the 120 and the lessons of the 5% Nation, that, you know, it's your responsibility to teach what you know to those who do not know.
Right. What, I was looking at your Reverb Nation page and your Facebook page and looking at some of the music there, and it was talking about who you sounded most like? You know, they make that comparison whenever they have an artist up there. They have, you know, and you were compared to Common and Tupac. But when you decided that you wanted to be an artist and wanted to tell, you know, tell social stories, you know, through your lyrics, were you thinking that, okay, in order to be popular, I need to sound like people who are already famous? Or were you saying, this is going to be my voice, and if it happens to sound like somebody else's voice, so be it?
Honestly, I appreciate when people make comparisons, you know, especially to artists like Pac or Common, because they're amazing artists. But at the same time, for me, it's all about, I like to do it my own way. I like to have a unique sound. I like having fresh ideas and working towards being as unique with the music as possible. But, you know, there's always going to be influences. Like, for me, the best compliment I ever got on my music was from Ralph McDaniels from Video Music Box. He was just like, you're like a hip-hop version of Curtis Mayfield. I grew up listening to Curtis Mayfield. So that's probably the only comparison I ever got where I wasn't like a little... Yeah, well, I can't front, that one put a smile on my face. But to me, Curtis Mayfield made music that was so relevant, not only for his time, but for all times. And, you know, it still got you moving. It still put that two-step on your feet, you know? So I think that it's important for artists to express themselves as uniquely as possible, but, you know, we wouldn't be who we were if we weren't influenced by people we listened to growing up, or, you know, even now, people that you hear, you're like, ah, that was dope how he did that. That's what's up.
I
appreciate the comparison.
Tell me about the event that you are in Oregon for. University of Oregon Social Justice Conference. You are currently involved in a lot of social justice type work. I mean, the flyer says, from the spirituals to hip hop, black music, socio-political importance in America. What's the presentation going to be, and what is the message you're going to be delivering?
Well, the presentation, it follows our music here in America, because black music is unique, that kind of the same way martial arts grow in certain places in the world, our music has grown the same way. Our voice and our music has not only paralleled our striving for social justice here in America, but it's also fueled it. It's also delivered hidden messages. And now we see with hip hop, it's the biggest music in the world. Basically, I start with the spirituals, but I do actually go back to the roots in West Africa, whether it be for Mali and Songhe, or even further south, and the importance of drums with our people. The spirituals were how we learned on the plantation. You know, we would be killed on sight if somebody found out that we were reading a book. So we taught ourselves through music. We relayed messages through music. And we worked towards freedom through our music. You know, like a song like, you know, The Drinking Gourd is teaching people to follow the North Star to get to the North if they escape from the plantation. So each facet of our music, from the spirituals to blues to jazz, rock and roll, and now to hip hop, has that same spirit inside of it. You know, and also each music has also come under attack and been co-opted in some way, shape, form, or fashion, whether it be from, you know, minstrel music imitating jazz and the blues to some of the garbage that we hear on the radio today with hip hop. You know, so the main message in the presentation is that music can change the world, and music has been changing the world for the last, you know, 500 years that we've been here in this country, and to actually show how powerful our voices can be.
Why do you think hip hop has the kind of longevity that it has had? I mean, what is it about the music form that makes it so universal?
Well, I think everybody relates to struggle, no matter what. You know, struggle is, all human beings experience struggle at some point in their life, whether you're rich, whether you're poor, whether you're black, white, purple, whatever. You know, everybody's going to experience some kind of struggle, and that's what hip-hop was born in. Hip-hop was born from, you know, that time in the late 70s, early 80s in the Bronx, where there were no instruments in school. So we had to figure out another way to make music. That passion that's innate in humanity to express ourselves. And I think that hip hop can go anywhere and be used anywhere, because you see with, you know, people in Eastern Europe or Africa or Palestine that are experiencing atrocities and hardships in their life that might not have that access to a piano or anything else. You know, somebody could beatbox, somebody could drum on a table, somebody can spin a record, and that person will then be able to express themselves. And I think that's the part of hip hop that is most common to everybody. And then at the same time, I mean, who doesn't like a good beat and want to actually move and be energetic when they're expressing themselves?
Right. Are you encouraged or discouraged by the state of Black people in the United States today?
Oh, I think there are a lot of things that I think we need to do to get where we need to be. You know, we're still trapped in the self-hatred that we've been perpetuating so much. We still don't love ourselves the way we should. And that part is discouraging to me. But on the other hand, I do see a lot of encouragement when I go to different schools and I'm seeing people like, you know, I'm here to get this degree and I'm going to take it back to my neighborhood and I'm going to do something to better my community. A lot of people starting up businesses and all kinds of ingenious ideas. So, I mean, on that level, I'm very encouraged. I just pray that as we do move up in society, that we don't let go of our struggle, and we don't let go of people who might not be rising up at the same time. Like, we have to always remember that we have to build up all of us in order for any of us to succeed.
Right. And I was kind of thinking that when I was listening to your song, Prayer of a Sinner, because that tells the story of somebody who is trying
to save my soul,
to meet God, but is carrying a, you know, a suitcase full of baggage.
Smoke too many new bombs, plus attend too many court dates to cool off. Been with too many women in sin, committing too much adultery, not to have a queen and a seed to hold close to me. Been a while since I listened to the Lord when he spoke to me. I seem to just live for the day, was born to decay, and don't do my best to pray five times a day. Gotta get saved, but who knows if the Lord will forgive my ways. Play too many $2 bottles of E&J and cognac, blunt wraps rolled with haze. Made more mistakes than most, and at this point it seems like a waste to try and shake my ghosts. Most of my life never loved myself, and that led to me scarring and drugging myself. Lately I've been wondering about my brother's health, cause we too stubborn to ask one another for help. So we just wait for the outcome and act on stealth. I laugh to keep from crying, insomniac, don't sleep, like it'll actually aid in the fight to keep me from dying. Fear of failure never kept me from trying. High school drop.
Prayer of a Sinner, actually it's like a bonus track on my first album. It was the last song I did for Paradise Lost. And at the time when I was making it, I was involved in a whole lot of garbage. And it's just about, you know, you don't have to be holier than thou to speak to God. You don't have to be holier than thou to help your community. You know, a lot of times we think, you know, in order for us to do something positive for other people, you have to be, you know, flawless. But all human beings are flawed. We all walk in contradiction every day. So it's just about trying to embrace who we are. You know, it's like that saying, you know, every saint has a past and every sinner got a story.
Right.
And that's really what that song is about. You know, I think that's the main message in my music as a whole, is that no matter who you are, where you're from, or what you got going on, God exists in you regardless, you know, and you can be and do whatever you choose, and regardless of what you are and regardless of what you choose, God is still going to be there with you.
As you have been involved in the hip hop lifestyle, the hip hop genre, the hip hop music, do you find that you have become more spiritual? Because if you were to believe popular culture, the only way that you can stay relevant and credible as a hip hop artist is to occasionally get yourself arrested, occasionally get shot. So I'm just wondering, I mean, what's your thought on that?
Well, I never want to have to occasionally experience either one of those things. I don't like coming in contact with police at all, ever. I think with me, just as growing as a man, I've become more spiritual. You know, hip hop is a major part of my life, but you know, just growing up and dealing with family and everyday life issues, it makes me more spiritual. I find myself to be less religious, but more spiritual as I get older. You know, I'm not as dogmatic as I used to be when I was younger. I find truth in most things when I look at them, and I'm able to sit down and build with anybody, regardless of faith or wherever they're coming from with their stories. So,
right.
I think hip hop has added on to that as well, because hip hop's allowed me the opportunity to travel where I didn't have that opportunity before. So I've gotten to see all different parts of the world and experience, you know, life in different parts of the world. Because I'm not one of those kind of artists who, when I travel, I'm trying to, you know, stay in a hotel or whatever. I'm like, yo, put me up on somebody's couch or somebody's floor, because I want to know what it's like. I want to know what life is like wherever I go.
Right. I wanted to get your take on this. I've spent a lot of time in the media, and I'm always curious about how there is so much focus on Martin Luther King's birthday or Black History Month during January and February, but the rest of the year, nothing. And it's always felt like the culture is saying, okay, that's out of the way till next year. As an artist, do you ever feel any of that stuff, and how do you deal with it?
Absolutely. I mean, the contributions of Africans, African Americans, or, you know, how they have women and Latinos History Month the same way. You know, everybody, all humanity has contributed to this world in ways that you experience every day. You know, so it's just like, you know, when people are like, oh, we need you to come do a Black History Month show, and then you never hear from those people again, or you only hear from them once a year. It's kind of like, okay, well, I see you're not really, about trying to know about my culture, know about my people, and truly respect our history. You're trying to fill a quota, you know, and it's sad, because there are so many. I remember when I was a kid, my mother gave me this coloring book. It was a Black History coloring book. Everybody else had like G.I. Joe and Transformers,
right?
Black History coloring book. And I'm glad I did, though, because it's like everywhere I look, I see, you know, the signature of our people here in this country.
Right.
You know, and it's something that people think, something as simple as a traffic light. You know,
right.
People have to use traffic lights every day. It's not something you should just respect somebody for 1 month out of the year. So I think that when it comes to the school system, it should be all these things should be incorporated all year round. It shouldn't just be somebody's history month, somebody's history week, or whatever. It's, you should learn about all of humanity all year round and how people have contributed to making our lives better all year round, you know?
Yeah. You know, some people criticize celebrities for taking a lot of the fame and influence that they have overseas, you know, to help people there, but they forget people here. But you haven't done that. I mean, you were part of something called the West Africa Project in 2010, but you also work with kids in New York and New Jersey as part of Flow, which I think is a cool project. Tell me about Flow. What is it?
Flow is For the Love of Words. It was started by my brother Raj. Originally, Raj and I, we were working. He was my manager, and we got this call from Impossible Music Sessions from a dude over there, Austin Dacey. He wanted me to perform some of the music from a group called the Baloberos Crew in Guinea-Bissau. And they had been harassed by the military police. They'd actually been detained and beat up for the music they do over there that exposes a lot of the problems with the government. So, you know, from there, it led to Hip Hop Harmony and a friend, Shivani, who was like, why don't you come over here and perform? And they got us to Senegal. They got us to Guinea-Bissau. We worked with Kobiana Records over there. And I was the first American hip hop artist to perform there. So when we came back, well, actually, I got ahead of myself. We connected children from Queens and Harlem with children in Bissau, the capital of Guinea-Bissau, and had them do a creative writing project with one another, in which we asked the children, like, well, what could you do to better your country? We asked them all these really great questions, and I think it should actually be up on my website, asansalammusic.com. You can read some of the children's writing. So when we came back, sister from here, Devin Austin, she found out that her lineage traced back to Guinea-Bissau. So she wanted to do something in Guinea-Bissau and reached out to us about possibly doing a show to raise money. But then we just decided a show is a one-time thing. You get the money and that's it. So we decided that it would be best if we donate the whole project that I was working on at the time, Music Is My Weapon, to actually building a school, freshwater well, in a medical facility over there in a small village called the Jati. So right now we've already built the school, we've already built the well, and we're very close to the amount to actually build not only a medical facility, but put solar panels on top of the medical facility.
Wow.
So yeah, it's honestly one of the best things I've ever been involved with, because people are actually moving to the Jati now because they used to have to walk like two hours to 2.5 hours to get drinkable water. So now people are going there to school. People are going there and raising a family, you know. So just saying, where some people are like, you know, people make money and then they try to do stuff overseas. I mean, I would love to be able to build a school in the United States. I mean, I have people ask me what my goals are. What I would love to do is to be able to open rec centers in the places that I grew up, you know, in Camden, Teaneck, and Jersey City could definitely use them. It's just, it's harder to do that here. So it's good that we've had this experience working in Guinea-Bissau, because now we'll know, okay, what can we do to actually make that happen here in the United States? Because the things that I do here, like in Jersey City, we have a monthly food and clothing drive. And we don't work with any organizations. It's just people that's from the hood or people from around the way that we just go outside. We set up a table and we get food, clothing, household appliances, you know, anything, Pampers, formula for babies, and just set it up on the corner. You know, we don't have a facility for it, and we don't deal with organizations who try to push some kind of agenda with it.
Right.
You know, because unfortunately, when you try to do stuff here, we see the same kind of thing, like, how you say people only want to hear black people speak in February. You also get people who only want to help homeless or underprivileged people during Thanksgiving to Christmas.
Right.
And then you'll never see or hear from them again. So what we've done is try to create something that is organic. Like, anybody can set up a table on a corner and give out food and clothes and toys. You actually see how many people are really, you know, full of it. Because they'll talk a good game and they'll say how much they want to do it. But once you say, yeah, you can't put your agency's name on anything here, then you never hear from them. So it's also been a good way for us to cut through a lot of BS that a lot of these so-called organizations try to throw at you when they want to come into your community.
Right. Let me ask you something about being mixed race. Now, your dad was is white Muslim. Your mom is...
No, he's not Muslim.
Oh, I'm sorry. I read on the on one of the sites that your dad was Muslim and he was Caucasian.
No, he's not Muslim. He's Caucasian and atheist.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. And my mother is Christian, African-American. Yeah.
Right. So when you... are performing your music. I mean, because, you know, I'm a light-skinned black male too, and I know that sometimes, I mean, we can be pretty mean to us if we all don't look the way some of us think we should. So I'm just curious. I mean, and so I'm just curious. When you have done your music, have you ever felt like, you know, I need to, you know, project this harder, or I need to be more forceful here because, you know, I need to convince or reassure or whatever that I'm just as much a part of this community as you are?
Not so much, honestly, because when I was raised, like my mother and my grandmother raised me, I really wasn't raised by my father. My mother told me at a very young age, you're light skinned, your father's white, but to the police, you're a nigga. She told me that very young. And it's pretty much been proven through my life that they're going to look at me a certain way. Right. You know, sometimes people might mistake me for being Latino or Arabic, but I've never really had a problem. There were a lot of mixed people when I was growing up, and we caught jokes and stuff, like especially when the Jungle Fever movie came out.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We caught the jokes and all of that, but at the same time, I think in the black community, you know, being that dating back to when we were first stolen and brought here, and the master and overseer would try to slip down and they would rape people and all of these other things that went on that started mixing us up already. It's kind of been accepted in our community that we come in all shapes and colors and shades and all of that. I mean, you know, sometimes you'll get people who got something to say, but you get people with ignorant ideas and opinions across the board, because as we see here in America with Barack Obama, who's biracial, they never refer to him as the first biracial president. They're always telling you he's the first black president.
Right.
And one drop of black blood back in slavery times would mean that your ass could get bought and sold just like anybody else. You know, it would just mean you were sold differently, that they would call you octoroon, quadroon, mulatto, whatever they were selling us at on the auction block at that time. So I don't ever feel like I gotta be anything but myself. I mean, there's a whole lot of racial injustice that still goes on in this country, and the only way that it's really ever gonna end is if people own up to the wrongs that they've done, and then at the same time, you know, we have to also be accountable for what we're contributing to our own demise at the same time.
Right. Well, Hassan Salam, it has been a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, brother.
Okay, bye-bye.
Peace.
I'm Don Merrill, and I've been talking with hip-hop poet, musician, and political activist Hassan Salam. Thanks for listening. I'm Don Merrill, and I'm talking with hip-hop poet, musician, and political activist Hassan Salam.
It's time for KBOO News at Noon. I'm Dan Johnson. The latest statistics show that 1 in 8 Oregon children suffer from mental illness, and 1 in 18 adults also suffer from mental illness, according to Oregon State Senate President Peter Courtney. He is calling for drastic changes in how the state funds mental illness, and he urges his colleagues to act quickly. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has announced that Oregon has not fared well when it comes to the amount of toxic chemicals released in our air, land, and water. The EPA reports that toxic chemicals in Oregon increased by 26% in the year 2011. Sunday night, a Portland police officer was involved in a shooting incident at Portland Adventist Hospital parking lot. Police received a call about a man in the parking lot with a gun. When officers arrived, reports say that shooting broke out, leaving one man dead. Police have placed the officer on leave pending further investigation. Early this morning, United Nations investigators reported that Syrian leaders, who they identified as suspected war criminals, should be tried by the International Criminal Court. A study just released by Gallup Poll tracking the percentage of gay and lesbian adults in America has established a first-ever demographic atlas of the group, citing that populations range from 1.7% of the total population in North Dakota to 10% of the population in the District of Columbia. Oregon's gay and lesbian adult population ranked close to the middle at 4.8%. Weather in and around the Portland area will be somewhat cloudy with brief sun breaks. Look for highs in the upper 40s. Listen Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. for the latest local, national, and international news brought to you by volunteer-powered KBOO. Dan Johnson, KBOO News.
And you are tuned to KBOO in Portland, 90.7 FM. It's time now for the Noontime Jamboree.